Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Global Great Awakenings on Global Freedom TV. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. For indeed, when the wicked rule, the people mourn. When the righteous rule, the people rejoice. So we are going to be looking into a lot of the interesting things that are developing in America and around the world with the great Mike Harris one more time. There is so much happening. Mike, it is great to have you on with us again on Global Freedom TV. And this is a great awakening. It is pretty profound today because I'm going to start out with some videos, and the first ones are of Maui. The Maui direct energy weapon is one thing that they've been talking about exposing. In case people haven't seen the videos and seen the pictures, I want to play that before we jump into the discussion, just to serve as sort of a narration for what the actual images are of this. Let me bring it up real quick.
Well, Scott, let's talk about something here first, because I want to cue people in before the video start. And that is, you look at these fires and you look at the damage of these fires. Look at the automobiles, how they look. The first time we saw automobiles that looked like that, that were burned up in that manner, was at 9/11. And so we've seen it again and again at the Paradise Fire in California. We've seen it at two or three of these other fires out here. This is not natural wildfires. There's something else going on. In addition to which, in Canada, in Oregon, and I heard in Hawaii as well, they also had leftist Antifa types who were out committing arson in parallel with this. And so we've got some really strange things going on here, where this doesn't appear to be naturally occurring wildfires.
It's very interesting. And, you know, I'm reminded of the James Bond film that came out in the 1990s. I can't remember exactly what it was called, but it was where the North Koreans had invented a satellite that harnessed the power of the sun, and it was a directed energy weapon. And it was so monstrously huge that this laser harnessing the sun's energy was, you know, essentially like 5 miles in diameter. And it certainly is something that we're seeing potentially here, because it's a devastating fire and collapse of metal and cars. Let me play this so people see this. And as Mike said, pay attention to the streets and the buildings, the vehicles, the metal, the
golden eye,
the twisted steel frames. Here we go. Now look at this road, Mike. On one side is the ocean, on the other side are storefronts. Yet all the cars that are on the left are burned out, as if someone
on both sides. Okay, but it's not just the side that's towards the fire, it's on both sides.
Right.
How are they radiating off the
corner? And those cars, we'll come back to it, are about 30 feet, between 25 and 30 feet from any burning building. Now, how hot does it have to get to melt and twist and metal? Those cars right there, they're far away from any buildings or grass or trees, and yet they are absolutely charred. Everything, the tires are melted, everything is gone, and look how far. This car, for example, look at this car. All the way over from this area that, if it was on fire, may have burning effects to here, but not all the way on the other side of the street.
I'd estimate that's a 75, 80 yards.
Right there, another, all these cars.
Look at the side that is towards the ocean.
Yes.
The same amount of burning on that side.
Why
do you see the same amount of burning on that side?
Exactly. This right here, this whole line of cars that are right next to the ocean, are just as charred as these ones. And yet all of the materials that were burning right here would have been shops and some trees. But they're just not on fire as if they would burn for a while and then extinguish. They are absolutely gone, turned to ashes. And the metal is bent, is warped, is twisted. It's as if a laser burned this whole area.
Look down here at the lower part of here where the air conditioning units are virtually unscathed.
Right here.
Yeah. Well, look at those two circles where the fans are. Those two
circles. Yeah, right here.
Yeah. I mean, how come those aren't twisted metal as well? I mean, you know, there's inconsistencies in this that defy physics.
One more time. There's some trees, but their leaves aren't. That car's okay. Maybe that was there later. Right here. All of these vehicles on this side burned.
If you look to the ocean side, let's down a little bit, and we're missing some good stuff over here.
Well, this is interesting. That's okay.
Now look, see these air conditioner?
Yep.
Those fans are unscathed.
Yep.
Yeah, that's thin metal. That's thinner than all automobile metal.
Right here. All these cars, right here.
Both sides.
Both sides. Look at these ones.
But you saw the tire, the both sides, the tires on both sides are burned up. They're all gone.
Yep.
Anyway, like I said, there's something else going on here than a wildfire. This is not an accurate description of what happened there. So, I don't know how much speculation you want to put on this, but this is looking remarkably like what I would consider to be a directed energy weapon of some sort.
Well, some of the speculation is surrounding the making of Maui into a smart city. The Maui experiment, how they destroyed Lahaina to bring in a new WEF smart city governance.
Okay, and by the way, Scott, the James Bond movie you're talking about was called GoldenEye.
GoldenEye, that was right.
Pierce Brosnan's first appearance as James Bond.
That's right. I remember that. Golden Eye was exactly what we're looking at. Now, here's an interesting photo, too, of the whole area completely turned to ash. Let's play this. This is
the end of the beginning. Welcome to today's show. This is another important video for anybody out there who's doubting that this fire wasn't created by our own government. I want to discuss what I mentioned in an earlier video, if you saw it. The potential of a smart city. Now, think of this perspective, and I'm going to show you some stuff. There's an article from 2018 from the World Economic Forum that I used in a previous video. And that article is about Hawaii having plans to be the first U.S. state to run entirely on clean energy. And there's another article from the World Economic Forum that talks about our alliance is creating smart city governance. Okay. They aren't going to be able to build smart cities unless they destroy the cities first, because they have to run out the small business owners who are not going to be on board or comply to their smart city nonsense. Their smart city is going to limit productivity, even though they pretend like it's going to increase it. And people don't want to be on board with it. They don't want to be forced into this stuff where they monitor and track how much carbon you use at your work. This is all what their plan is, so they can shut you down and control you as they please, like in China. So, that being said, I'm going to get into all the stuff about Hawaii and the plans for to be the first USA to run entirely. I'm going to get into the smart city. This is all stuff you need to see, because we all know the World Economic Forum are the ones pulling the strings, right? So if we know that when we see a fire like that, then the second that we hear that the plans are to bring in a smart city, you'll know why it was done. Lahaina is not a huge city. It's very small. It's more of a town than a city, but it's all small businesses. It's small restaurants. It's small art galleries. It's small souvenir shops. People, when they go to Maui, go there for that reason. They couldn't destroy somewhere like Honolulu. And we had the governor of Hawaii, who happens to be go by the name of Josh Green. You can't make it up. right? Green is in green energy, who was just at the United Nations 2 months ago talking about Hawaii and being the first state to be 100% sustainable. Take a listen to this guy.
Governor Josh Green touted Hawaii's sustainability accomplishments at the United Nations Economic and Social Council in New York City. The governor was the keynote speaker in the forum that included more than 40 presenters from around the world. Green pointed out that Hawaii is in a unique position as an island state and has tried to lead the way in promoting renewable energy.
We tried to lead on energy and climate. We were the first state to mandate 100% renewable energy for electricity. So it's, again, an opportunity as a small state with technically a small footprint, but we do punch above our weight a little bit because of our position in the Pacific.
Speakers were invited to help implement the United Nations Agenda for Sustainable Development Goals in 2030.
So that's Governor Green. I mean, this is how in our faces this stuff is, right? It's about green energy. It's the Green Plan. Governor Green was just put in place in 2022. And the first, you know, less than a year, this happens. He's already just been at the United Nations 4 weeks ago. He was there 4 weeks ago, July 12th and July 19th. He was, you know, through the 19th. That's when he was there. Okay. And he's talking about this stuff. Now, then we have to look at what a smart city is, because a lot of people out there don't understand that it's an enslavement city. They see all this tech and they're like, that's high tech. That's really neat. And one of the things that's going on in our country, you probably hear all these stories, right? Oh my goodness, Oregon's going to crap. San Francisco's going to crap. New York's going to crap. That's done by design. That's done to weed out business owners, to make them leave. They need to build smart cities. They're not going to be able to torch every city, so they need to destroy them economically. Look how many businesses have gone under in San Francisco. Malls going under, street stores going under. San Francisco is a hub. It is filled with rich people. Okay, so this is done by design. We know big tech runs not only out of California, they run out of San Francisco, Twitter, et cetera. So this is done by design. The World Economic Forum, our alliance is creating smart city governance, okay, which is control, right? Which means you don't leave the city. You stay in the city. Where you go, we say you go, right? You think this is all coincidental? I guarantee you that they're going to come out and they're going to announce when they start with the rebuilding plans for Lahaina, that Lahaina is going to be the first U.S. city that's a smart city. And it makes sense that they would choose Lahaina, one, because it's small compared to doing it in the Midland, and two, because it's not in the continental U.S. Okay, is happening up.
Empty roads. Impossible? Well, it's actually the concept behind the 15-minute city.
15-minute city or the 15-minute neighborhood is certainly something that's become very much, you can say, in vogue recently.
Paris is working towards it, so is Barcelona and Portland, and now Vancouver also has a plan in place.
Big new move number one was that we build a city where for all residents in the city, the 90% of your daily needs are within a walking distance.
When I put the closest grocery store in my GPS, it's more than a 30-minute walk away.
But in a 15-minute city, I could walk to the grocery store, post office, doctor's appointment, gym, hair salon, dentist, you name it, all within, you guessed it, just 15 minutes. A solution not just for gridlock on the streets, but also for carbon emissions. In fact, the goals of creating a more walkable city were announced as part of Vancouver's recent Climate Emergency Action Plan. And the Vancouver Plan and Project Team are already in the process of figuring out what neighborhoods should look like and how to translate that into land use strategies.
You just look at your neighborhood and look at your walk score. The walk score actually just tells you how many good things you're a short walk from. Where we get really low walk scores are in the parts of the city that are largely suburban. And so there's some
options as network citywide in hopes that 80% of trips by 2030 will be made either by foot, bike, or transit. They also announced disincentives for driving, like implementing transportation pricing in the Metro Core and creating a carbon pollution surcharge on residential parking permits. But all of this takes some time.
Cities change slowly over time because you actually have to build them.
The team says they're looking at how to move Vancouver towards this vision over the next 30
standard of living for its residents. Alphabet, an umbrella.
Let me chime in here real quick. I just sent you something on your Skype account you need to bring up, because the police chief in Lahaina here is the same guy who's the incident commander for the Las Vegas
I saw that.
That was on Gateway Pundit today. So this guy's got a little bit of a history here. There were never any answers out of that. There were 60 people killed there. This guy oversees and keeps the lid on these human catastrophes from leaking out. You know, he puts a seal on them. Nothing gets out. No real news is there. Only the narrative that they want you to know. So it's the same guy. I think Peltier. And this is not a good thing. I mean, we're dealing with monsters here who don't like humanity. So that's kind of what we've got here.
Article that you just sent, Mike. Conservatives alarmed after report that current Maui police chief was incident commander during 2017 Las Vegas massacre. This new revelation will certainly not give Americans confidence that the true cause behind the Maui fires will ever be known. Instead, we can count on a likely cover-up instead. As Christina Layla previously reported, devastating wildfires in Maui have left almost 100 people dead, with approximately 1,000 still unaccounted for. People were reportedly jumping into the ocean and historic Lahaina town was destroyed. The news only gets worse, though. Reports reveal that current Maui police chief John Pelletier was the incident commander during the Las Vegas massacre in 2017, the worst mass shooting in American history. An incident commander is the top decision maker during a major incident. Their job is to delegate tasks and listen to input from subject matter experts to ultimately bring the incident to resolution. Maui Police Chief John Pelletier came to Hawaii after 22 years in Las Vegas. He was incident commander for the 2017 mass shooting that left over 50 dead. Here's an excerpt from a November 21 article on the Honolulu Civil Beat by Blaise Lavelle. He's seen his share of violence, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so Mike, we've got, again, the Las Vegas shooting, which I think Jim Fetzer and many others have done some wonderful work, has been revealed as, I'll let you describe it in your mind, but it's a false flag, obviously. It was not a real shooting. Jim had talked about a lot of the sound effects being broadcast over the speaker systems. A lot of other things were going on. They speculated it was a cover-up for some of the Saudi princes. There was a competition. I'll let you fill in the blanks. Go ahead.
Well, the Saudis were involved there somehow. I don't know what their involvement was, but I believe Ben Salman himself was there at that time. And so, like I said, I'm not an expert on the Las Vegas massacre. I'm really not, but that is what my understanding of it is. Anyway, the bottom line here is we got a dirty cop who squashed another investigation, going to be the same cop in charge to squash this investigation. It was no coincidence that Mueller was sent to clean up the 9/11 wreckage, and then they sent Mueller after Trump. Now, they've got these guys. These are their known guys. You know, this is like a mafia clan here that we have running this country. And, he's our guy who does this. He's our guy who does that. And that's what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with organized crime. That's what runs our country right now. We're no longer a republic. We've turned into an oligarchy, which is run by a bunch of friggin' Jew criminals. So there you have it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me switch to this other video that's pretty telling.
Thank you, Chairman. Thanks for being here, everybody. Look, a couple things. First, what we're seeing here, what we're witnessing with the Biden family.
Madam Speaker!
Thank you.
God damn it. Something's.
We're not getting much volume out of here. I can barely hear it. So
or being some weird things have been happening there. Well, I'll hand it to you, Mike. What does it mean for Lahaina? What is the smart city? I mean, are we witnessing just a complete devastation of anything that is American? Are we now in the throes of a death blow to the Republic? Are we just in a full-blown civil war and we don't know it? Because these sort of events and the attacks on Lahaina, I mean, it's coming to a city near you. It's coming. It's the white break of the wave.
Well, Scott, you know, as I've been saying for a very long time, the United States has been the victim of an asymmetrical war being waged against us for a very long time. Probably started back when the Federal Reserve was put in, actually before then. But we have been the victims of this. And now we're finally seeing the evil deeds, the acts of war are coming to the surface. We're watching them, witnessing them, you know, real time. The advantage we have now is that the internet is out here, and for the sites that are not yet censored and not yet blocked, we can still communicate among ourselves and we can circulate truth quicker than ever. This is really messing up their plans because, you know, when it was just printed newspapers and radio and TV, they can put a lid on it pretty easy. But with the internet and there's 50 million podcasters out there like you and I doing the same thing, and it's really hard to shut everybody up. You know, it's kind of a difficult task. So we're looking at Google now introducing all their new global censorship tools, and the UN is embracing them because they're trying to take this thing home. They want us exterminated, and those who survive they want enslaved. I hate to sound like a lunatic here because I never thought I'd ever say these words, but that's what it seems like more and more every day. I see more evidence of it every day. Has anyone gotten more free? Have we seen any evidence where things are getting better? No. And Trump coming along really was a monkey wrench in their gears here. And that's why they're indicting him again now, 10 counts of RICO statutes against him now in Georgia, because they have to stop this guy at all costs, because they will all hang, and even the little fish are going to be doing life in prison. And so these guys have got it all on. They're all in. They can't get out. There's no escape for them. With the crimes they've committed already, they will be sentenced to death for what they've done to the people of this country and the people of the world. I mean, look at the crimes against the Afghanistan people. Look at the crimes against the Iraqi people, the Libyans, the Syrians. Look at the crimes against our own people in this country. I mean, Ollie North, John Poindexter, and William Colby were bringing cocaine in the country and selling it to the black inner city. And you wonder why we got a drug problem in the black inner city? That's when cops went from carrying 38 specials to carrying Glock 17s. I mean, this is all predictable. We've watched this coming. It's been like a slow motion avalanche, for my entire lifetime. But I never knew. It took a while to start connecting these things, that they're not unrelated, that they're not uncorrelated. They're all tied together. It's an intricate plan that they have. Mm-hmm. And here it is. It's here real time that they're making their move. You know, there comes a point in time when you're playing a game of chess or a game of poker or whatever, where you've got to make your move. And you got to make your move. They're making their move now. This is it. We can see them. And they didn't count on the internet being so revealing to them and what their plans were. We're all supposed to wake up one day and have 90% of our neighbors dead and the rest of us in chains, in slaves.
Well, we are certainly seem to be going that way. Let me play this too.
So today we're going to give a little update on the Hawaiian fires. Now I want you to look at this footage, and this sure doesn't look like a fire to me.
Let me go back for there. Watch. Look at these trucks by a wall.
So today we're going to give a little update on the Hawaiian fires. Now I want you to look at this footage
right there.
And this.
Look at this. There's a wall. This is a retaining wall or whatever the hell it is. It's a wall. There's nothing to burn. It would stop any flames coming over. The flames don't go over like a water and then wash over.
The trees are still standing.
Those trees are standing. Yeah, there's nothing charred here. The leaves are a little brownish, of course, but there's a wall here, yet there's no black soot against the wall, as if there was a fire coming this way, and there's no way a fire could come over the wall.
It sure doesn't look like a fire to me. It looks like something almost exploded or something went off. Now, what's interesting is certain things are still standing.
More trees.
While other things are not. Now, the governor did say this is climate change doing this. Interesting. What they don't talk about is in January how they had in Maui a smart city conference to turn Maui into an entire smart island, changing everything to electric, renewables, solar panels, and pushing everybody into electric.
All these bushes.
Vehicles.
This bush.
15-minute smart cities. So now what's also interesting is next month in September, Hawaii is hosting the Digital Government Summit utilizing AI to govern the island. It's almost like they're resetting something to start rebuilding for this in which they're trying to push. Now, when we look at all the climate change narrative that they're going to try to push, but they're not going to talk about the Weather Modification Act of 1976. I highly recommend everybody look into this act because who is involved in the weather modification activities? Department of Agriculture, Department of Defense, Department of Interior, EPA, and NASA. So if they're modifying the weather, then could they have caused this event? So if we see that the Department of Defense and other factions are responsible for modifying the weather, well, then if we look at direct energy weapons, we can maybe see how this can all relate to this event.
So we have the city of Lahaina and Maui destroyed by who? And for the purposes of wiping out everything so they can regenerate a smart city with all of their climate, religious, social credit score, Star Trek sort of world. They're desperately trying to impregnate Maui with this monstrosity. You know, I'll hand it back to you, Mike, because people I think are looking at this saying, obviously this is a directed energy weapon. That's obvious. That there's no question there. This is not fires. This was a directed energy weapon. But who did it is the real question. And I think
that's the question. Energy. And I think you've answered the question already, Scott, with your commentary about the WEF wanting to impose their 2030 agenda, 15-minute smart cities, and then beyond that, their 2050 agenda upon us. They want to reduce the human population. They want us off their land. They want to do it. Now, we're going to talk about directed energy weapons. I can't speak with authority about the microwave type of weapons. I can speak about authority with laser type weapons. And you know, most lasers, believe it or not, you can't see the beam. And it's not like they have in the movies where it's a steady state beam where right. It goes out and burns and it'll burn for 30, 40 seconds. It doesn't do that. Most laser pulses, there's two things that matter. One of them is the width of the pulse. How much time is it? How many milliseconds is the pulse? Is a laser excitable to where it'll emit a pulse? How quickly can it emit a second pulse after that? Okay, those are key parameters. The next parameters is what is the spot size? You know, how big of a spot are you trying to put down there? What are you trying to burn? If you're trying to burn paper, you have a pretty big spot. If you're trying to burn or mark metal, it's a very small spot. So what is the spot size? And those two things, the pulse width and the spot size, dictate energy density. How much energy per square millimeter, centimeter, whatever it is, are you getting on the surface of whatever it is you're touching? And that's going to determine what your effect is. I was instrumental in the adoption of laser marking technologies with Motorola. They used to mark all their devices with an epoxy ink, glue white, very messy, nice, pretty marked, but we changed them over to laser marking much quicker, much less expensive, still a very, very good, brilliant mark. You know, I was instrumental in introducing that technology. So I know a little bit about this. And these are the things that have to be looked at and have to be examined. And you look at how the level of devastation there, I don't know what's powering these things. If they were lasers, I'm not saying they are. If they were, they would have to have an enormous power source. An enormous power supply to drive this. particularly if it's continuous marketing. Like I said, it's not going to be continuous. What's the break? Is it a 2 mile millisecond pulse with a 5 millisecond break? What is it? I mean, how fast can the laser recharge? How fast can it go? And these are questions I can't answer. I don't have enough data. Just don't have enough.
Well, I think we've got enough data to determine that this is obviously a coordinated, planned attack on the American people, the American businesses. I'm wondering, are there anybody left in any sort of media or political circles that have any courage or character to even raise this and talk about it? You know, I don't hear Tucker Carlson talking about this. I don't expect anything from Fox, from Shannon Bream, or Hannity, or any of these castrated Ken dolls, Brett Baer. I don't hear anybody talking about the physical scientific anomalies that prove beyond any doubt that this was not a grass fire. This is something else. And when you don't talk about this, when you don't talk about the obvious, you are showing that you're a traitor to everything.
You're complicit in the crime.
Yes.
And, I switched off of Fox. I don't watch them at all anymore. I watch Newsmax or OAN. Newsmax is a little too pro-Israel for me. OAN is a little better, but they're far more amateurish.
Yes.
But I think I'm getting a better class of news. They're almost as good as Press TV.
Yes.
Not quite. Almost.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let's see. There's another article. Robin Epps is Ray Epps' wife. Remember Ray Epps at the Capitol, who was commanding people. She is the national director of sales and development for none other than Dominion Voting Machines. So Ray Epps' wife, Robin Epps, and I'll put up a picture of her right here.
Well, it's what they do. They all keep it in house. I mean, they're very vertically integrated.
There you go, right there. National Director of Sales and Development for none other than Dominion. Robin Epps, right there. Wife of Ray Epps. Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Well, it really is. It really is. It's, it's... once you trace these connections down, you find out who's with who, who's married to who, who's invested in who, where the money goes. It's a pretty small web. I mean, I think there's probably 10,000-15,000 people in this country that need to be dealt with.
Yeah,
we could be free, and it's not that many, but they're all going to hang if we ever get power back. They're all going to hang.
And that's where this should actually be the shot heard around the world, the beginning of a revolution. Here's another video from a different angle.
Scott, I mean, what are these cars in the front of the photo? Or did they just drive in there today? They weren't there.
These look like they just drove in. Yeah. These ones right
here. They look all brand new. And I'm scared. The one thing I was looking for was, were there cars that were missed on that on the stretch up there where all the burned out cars? Because one thing you'll notice in these things is that there'll be three cars burned out. One of them is untouched. The next four cars are burned out. That's another telltale sign to look for. Look for these little clues like this. It's kind of like when the plants aren't going back.
Now look around here. You've got these funny little, I don't know, circles, or I don't know what that is, but it's almost like a halo around these cars. Look at this car's complete engine block is gone. This isn't as bad. Look, the ocean is here. This car, for example, is this car is far on the other side. It would have had a car blocking it. Okay, this car wouldn't just ignite like styrofoam. It may have gotten burned, but this one would have been protected because this is essentially a wall, right? This is a wall, these two cars, to block this one and block this one. But yet these are torched as well.
Yeah, but look at the roofs of these cars. They all seem to have pretty much uniform burn marks on them. And I mean, look at it. It's not like something came at them at street level. Something came down.
Look at these ones right here. Just both these cars. And look how far this is.
Here's another one with the engine compartment gone. We saw the same effect at 9/11. Exact same effect.
Yeah. Now this is probably 6, 6, 6, 6, 6, 6. That's probably like 30, between 30 and 40 feet right here. So everything, and then you have, this is all a parking area for these shops. So you essentially have 50 feet. And if these were burning, yeah, they would be hot, but they wouldn't go all the way on this side of the street. There's nothing here to burn except ocean and rocks and a wall. And there's nothing here. Yet these cars are all torched. Now this one doesn't look as bad. That's kind of like what you're saying, Mike.
Well, let's keep this moving. We have a bunch of things to talk about here. Yeah, although this is a big deal.
I just want one more pass.
And I like Lahaina. I've been there, a number of times. It's a nice, cute little area. At least it was.
Yeah.
That blue car there, it looked untouched.
You know, in this, we cannot allow this to be unchallenged. This has to be the throwing down of the gauntlet. This has to be their unsheathing of the knife that they are now going to come at you, and they've already drawn blood, and now they intend to hack off your hands and hack off your feet and hack off your guts and kill you eventually. This is the destiny that they want to force down every American's throat. And this has to trigger an awakening, an uprising, and a sense of civic violence against these people who've been involved. And anyone that doesn't investigate it, anyone that doesn't do a pyrotechnic analysis that lays out, like architects and engineers did on 9/11, that lays out exactly precisely the car wreckage and looks at how much heat is required to burn the buildings, twist metal, and leap over on the other side of the road and carry a quite hot torch to burn these cars. It's a physical impossibility. And I don't mind belaboring it, because this cannot be something that is just passed over.
I agree. I mean, like I said, we've been in a downward death spiral since 9/11, because the perpetrator is still walking around out there. You know, that those people were never brought to justice. And, oh, here we go. This is the one I sent you earlier today.
This is the one that you sent. Kaganism, the people staring us into another war. The Iraq war debacle, the relative to Bush restraint of the Obama administration, and the 2016 anti-interventionist campaign of Donald Trump may have seemingly discredited the neoconservative movement and its personalities, but they have come roaring back. And here they are, the PNAC, Project for a New American Century, Kagan family. Donald Kagan, Victoria Nuland Kagan, Robert Kagan, Fred Kagan, my God, they all look like a bunch of fat slobs. This guy's cross-eyed. This little whore, I've seen her all over Ukraine. She's the one who
said, and in Niger this week as well.
Niger, yeah, she's the one who said fuck the EU, and now she's been in Niger. And I tell you, this woman needs to be executed by due process of law. Immediately, all of these people do. Let me continue.
All of these. He's got, this is who has been directing our foreign and military policy since 9/11. Is this group right here. These are the ones we're calling the shots. These are all Khazarian mafia Jews. Okay. And I will give you a hint. Kagan means king in Khazarian language. So these are the kings. And these are the ones who are directing our country's foreign policy to their own agenda, not to the agenda and the will of the American people. Once again, another proof that we are now no longer a republic. We have become an oligarchy with these criminals manipulating our foreign policy. This is what this is all about. These are the people. These are the people who are destroying our country before our eyes.
Let me read it. This new stage in American foreign policy could be characterized as Kaganism, neither Democrat or Republican, but rather a nonpartisan 21st century crusade for liberalism, quote unquote. Donald Kagan, the patriarch of Kaganism, followed a similar intellectual trajectory to his colleagues Irving Kristol and Norman Podhoretz, Marxist academics who transformed into rabid Reaganoid cold warriors in response to the Soviet Union's support for Arab nationalism and anti-Zionism in the 1960s. Donald was quite clearly in the Republican camp, though his children have dropped some of the right-wing elements of the neoconservative doctrine previously used to mobilize evangelical Christian voting blocs and replaced it with a unified American state ideology that is as at home in the Democrat Party as it is in the GOP. Donald's sons, the American Enterprise Institute's Frederick Kagan, and the Brookings Institute's Robert Kagan were highly influential in the George W. Bush administration through think tanks such as the Project for a New American Century and the Foreign Policy Initiative, though today they have largely distanced themselves from the GOP following the party's alienation of Jewish elites through Trumpification. At PNAC, the Project for a New American Century, the Kagans were primarily concerned with expanding Israeli power by using the United States to topple Saddam Hussein, Bashar al-Assad, and strangling Iran. But by 2006, they grew increasingly suspicious and hostile towards Russia and China for seeking more control in how they interface with Western, read Jewish, financial institutions, and cultural values, while simultaneously choosing to pursue their own foreign policy paths independently. The fears of Kaganism. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay. Over time, the fears of Kaganism have been vindicated as Russia and China have evolved from wildcard United Nations votes to outright revisionist powers ready to directly confront Washington interlopers in their backyards. The Kaganists blame the rise of China, Russia, and Iran on the war and free trade weary American people, who in 2016 even managed to pressure Hillary Clinton into tactically walking back her support for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a move that enraged Kagan. For most Americans, the nation-wrecking trade deficits, which are in truth subsidies to buy subservience, trillion-dollar wars, and mountains of body bags required to oversee a world empire, are neither necessary or worthwhile for the well-being of the geopolitically gifted and resource-rich United States. In 2019, current Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Robert Kagan, the husband, Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland Kagan, published an editorial exoriating the America First message, embraced by segments of both parties, and reiterated the minority Jewish-held internationalist elite consensus think tanks have been churning out for decades. According to Blinken and Kagan, a world of realism where countries are free of Jewish minders and American blood and treasure is exclusively reserved for the benefit of the American people is a jungle that allows budding Hitler's Putin, Mussolini's Iran, and Hirohito's China to spread anti-democratic revolution against Anglo-American, a term Kaganists use to identify their civilizational project, even as they support demographic replacement of the European stock in English-speaking countries, liberal globalist hegemony. Under the doctrine of Kaganism, the only solution to global conflicts is to refuse diplomacy with sovereign states that have different cultures or political traditions, and instead kill and replace them through the Bolshevik export of American values around the world, which they describe as the primacy of New York finance and free trade, arbitrary and illegal regime change wars, open borders, and the free movement of people, actively demoralizing and disempowering racial minorities and other planks of the Jewish open society that intends to salt all potential seedbeds for fascism or anti-Semitism, even though much of the world, including the American people, don't want it. The central domestic political theory of Kaganism purports that liberalism is in perpetual antagonism with populism, which the Kagans view as a strain of fascism. In other words, the will of the people. The Kaganists view the democrat accountability of political leaders, self-interested, at least in the case of Gentiles, trade-offs in the free discussion of ideas as a distraction or minor inconvenience to suppress and push through, as shown in their latest book celebrating Franklin Delano Roosevelt for deceiving the American people into fighting a world war against Germany and Japan, two countries Kagan admits never posed a security threat to the United States but had to be lured into a confrontation anyway. At the Institute for the Study of War, Frederick Kagan and the ISW founder Kimberly Kagan, Frederick's wife, and let me add, at the Institute for the Study of War, they have General, what's his name, General Green, the old guy with the glasses who's always on Fox. So you've got him with the Kagans, that absolutely disgusting, have written extensively about the information space as a battle realm. Let me read that again. Have written extensively about the information space as a battle realm, no different from the land, sea, and air. Well, we did that in Booz Allen Hamilton when I was there in 2009 to 2010-11, information warfare, psychological warfare. Under Kaganism, the minds of citizens are clay to be molded, and the role of the American government and business elites is to manufacture consensus for decisions made by Jewish policymakers through the control and manipulation of cyberspace and mass media and the naming in the name of policing and misinformation. The Department of Homeland Security, a highly insular Jewish wing of the U.S. government dedicated to domestic spying, sought to formally implement this directive, but then paused its official establishment after popular outcry. The closure of this disinformation board was meaningless. Recent journalistic pieces have reported that much of the political content users consume on Facebook, Google, and Twitter is subject to direct editorial oversight from droves of FBI and CIA agents employed full-time by social media companies. In recent years, Western and Zionist intelligence agencies have been very active in seeking to manufacture popular support for foreign interventions, which in practice range from the amateurish and analog Syrian information war 10 years ago to the much more sophisticated, very online, and more organic-looking pro-Ukraine push. Most of the Kagan clan is dedicated to providing Washington's ideological framework, but its most prominent member, Robert Kagan's wife, Victoria Nuland, has been instrumental in implementing it around the world. Though previously not as well known, Nuland is no stranger to disastrous foreign policy decisions. Prior to serving under Obama, she was an important national security advisor, making calls on Iraq for Dick Cheney during the first Bush government, while her husband was busy calling Europeans, quote, pussies for refusing to join the coalition of the willing against Saddam Hussein. Nuland was busy roping Europe into the Afghanistan quagmire in order to maintain the occupation while easing American logistical challenges in Iraq. Nuland's most famous moment came in 2014 after a phone call from to the U.S. Embassy was publicized, exposing her as one of the shadowy figures behind the coup that overthrew the democratically elected Ukrainian government and put the country on track for the bloody war it is currently engulfed in. Nuland has admitted that this coup cost American taxpayers $5 billion. For Nuland, the lives of, quote, allies and innocent people are disposable pawns on a chessboard, much like Jewish liberal interventionist Madeleine Albright's famously ghoulish appraisal of trading 500,000 Iraqi children lives just to weaken Iraq's economy. The Kagans believe The hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian casualties are irreparable harm done to the Ukrainian nation is a worthy exchange if it means potentially blemishing Russia and China prestige on the world stage or extending Washington's universal hegemony by a few years. As the war drags on, polls now show that the majority of Americans oppose giving Ukraine any more aid. Encouraging news for the Ukrainian side has become ever more scant, and the famed counteroffensive appears to have amounted to nothing. Yet Frederick Kagan, the warped mind behind the disastrous 2007 Iraq troop surge, an advocate of a second surge, continues to publish articles with the titles like How the Ukraine Counteroffensive Can Still Succeed. Ukraine is by no means the last we have seen of Kaganism. While the world has reacted in a far more nuanced manner to the conflict than expected, and the U.S. has struggled to win most of the world over to the anti-Russian campaign, the neoconservative doctrine is once again ascendant. Last July, Nuland assumed a new and more powerful role as Undersecretary at the State Department. In her previous role as Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, Nuland was publicly identified by the now-imprisoned Pakistani leader Imran Khan as the principal architect behind the U.S.-orchestrated coup against him, which was executed in retaliation for Khan's policy of neutrality regarding the Ukraine war. In Niger, where 1,000 U.S. troops are stationed and refuse to leave, Nuland met with the country's new government to threaten them with violence if they do not restore the deposed puppet government, a threat the Washington-Paris proxy African alliance of ECOWAS has been openly telegraphing as well. Though Nuland has been lighting fires on every continent on the planet, the most trademark Kaganist escalation has been in the development of thousands of U.S. Marines to the Persian Gulf in order to advance Israeli strategic interests. Shortly after Nuland took her new office, the U.S. State Department announced that continuing the Trump-era project of forging an anti-Iran and anti-Palestinian alliance between Saudi Arabia and Israel is now its top Middle East priority. Ever since Washington's arbitrarily left the Iran nuclear deal in 2018, the U.S. has been paying cat's paws like Saudi Arabia, to seize Iranian oil ships in the region in order to damage the Iranian economy. Under international law, this is an act of piracy, and Iran is legally allowed to defend its vessels through military measures. Since the seizures began, Iran has been responding to hostile nations by hijacking their ships back and launching drone attacks on Saudi oil infrastructure. The Saudis appear to have cut their losses and signed a Chinese-brokered peace deal with Tehran last spring. Riyadh's demands for breaking this new understanding with Iran, understanding how desperate Washington is to advance Israeli interests, grow more audacious by the minute. In exchange for normalizing ties with Israel, the Saudis want the right to engage in nuclear proliferation, billions worth of high-tech offensive weapons, and a security guarantee that even the Biden administration knows will be heavily abused. So far, Washington has been reluctant about granting all of Riyadh's wishes, but the State Department is still keen on showing that it remains very invested in the Middle East. It could even be argued that it is seeking to find a footing for war. I believe they are. This week, the Department of Defense announced that thousands of U.S. soldiers and naval battleships will be deployed to the Strait of Hormuz with instructions to fire upon Iranian forces that attempt to seize any ships. This deployment is an open provocation that the Iranians have vowed to respond to in kind, including by utilizing hypersonic missiles if necessary. There is a historical precedent for this. Previous U.S. administrations have utilized belligerence at sea with the goal of generating casus belli to gain popular support for a war elites have already planned. If Washington really wanted safe commerce at the sea, they would stop ordering regional neighbors to hijack Iranian ships. This outrageous behavior is reminiscent of what occurred in 1940 and 1941. While remaining officially neutral, Franklin Delano Roosevelt decided the U.S. had a larger security sphere in the North Atlantic and deployed the Navy to escort British vessels that were losing the naval war to Germany. by protecting British ships on the Atlantic while simultaneously allowing Allied forces to attack German ships. The U.S. hoped to force the Axis into an open conflict, a point enthusiastically conceded by Robert Kagan in his most recent book on American foreign policy in the first half of the 20th century. FDR finally got his wish in September 1941 when a German submarine mistakenly fired on the USS Greer 3 months before Pearl Harbor. Historians, including Kagan, are in consensus that the USS Greer incident was an honest accident caused by America's belligerent behavior at sea, but FDR blatantly lied about it and used the incident to incite anti-German and anti-Italian jingoism to try and crack the American people's steadfast opposition to another European war. After further over-the-top escalations by the FDR administration, Germany and Italy and Japan decided that they had to take a gamble and try and fight the transatlantic juggernaut in a two-front war that they eventually lost in the face of American industrial, financial, and numeric advantage that was, even before Pearl Harbor, had already powering the Soviet, French, and British war efforts. In his 2023 book, Kagan does not view World War III as a conflict humanity would be better off avoiding, but instead a testament to the American Empire's invincibility and the necessity of war to spread the ideologies of liberalism, capitalism, and globalism. The Kaganists believe a multi-front war against nuclear-armed China, Russia, and soon Iran is better than sharing the world with whoever they categorize as anti-democratic or fascist. How many Americans agree with that insane prospect? The Kaganists don't care. Unless we organize politically to stop them, they're taking us along for the ride, whether we like it or not. An excellent article, Mike. Thank you for sharing it. It was written by Eric Stryker. Excellent, excellent. I'll let you comment on your analysis.
The only thing I can tell you about that article is I wish I had written it. It is. It
sounded like you did. I was surprised. I thought I'm going to see Mike's name when I go to the top.
It is far and away an excellent article. It identifies who the enemies are within our own government, who are directing us off this cliff, who are taking us to war after war after war, and is what we the people do not want. If you've ever had it in your face that we are no longer a democratic republic, these people are what is in our way. These are the people who are damaging our country and thwarting the will of the people. These are the ones. The fact that they look at populism as antithetical to their agenda, I don't care about their agenda. They are few, we are many. These people need to be executed for treason, with or without a trial. I don't care. But they're, you know, I mean, just because if you commit treason, you may not deserve the trial. You know, I mean, we may have to expedite things for these type of people
who are. Well, you know, let me just say, Mike, we've talked about the geopolitical situation for a long time. We've talked, and I'm going to leave this article so people see the faces of the devil servants themselves, these fat, gluttonous, Jabba the Hutt, ugly Jewish Israeli Zionist fascists. I mean, the demented, eye-crossed lunatic here, all of these scumbags, they all need to be executed for treason after due process of law, of course. But they need to be executed for treason as far as I'm concerned. But we're seeing the assembling of a war against Iran, Russia, and China, which we would lose because they have far better weaponry. The maneuvering on the Let's look at the Strait of Hormuz and the Persian Gulf. Now, Iran has hypersonic missiles. It has missiles all over the Persian the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz, land missiles. They would destroy every ship that comes up and crosses a certain barrier. Do you see that being the trigger point? Are they going to trigger this Pearl Harbor, if you will, by American ships getting hit with Iranian missiles and stuff to try and trigger a larger conflict, you know, with Israel, you know, getting involved and stuff? Do you see that?
They need a war. You know, their banking system is falling apart. You know, the BRICS on the 22nd of this month are having their meeting. And what comes out of that meeting, I hope they announce a gold-backed currency. Yeah. That is my desire, because that will kill the dollar and that will kill the Federal Reserve. We've been slaves to the Federal Reserves. you know, a Federal Reserve note, the dollar bills in your wallet are worth the full faith and credit of a bankrupt, failed country right here. And they're worth nothing. And if the BRICS come out with a gold-backed currency, I know where I put my money. And I tell you what, I love my country, but I hate these people, and I will not support anything that they support, nothing. Yeah. I will support Russia in this conflict. I will support Iran in this conflict. I will not support these fat, ugly fucking Jews here. Excuse my language.
No, I agree with you. I'm 100% in agreement.
We're identifying who the real enemy of the United States is, and it's these fat Jews. And yeah, it's time to figure it out. They have infiltrated us. These people hold power. These people are dictating our foreign policy. These people are the reason that we lost men and women to death in Iraq and Afghanistan, because of these fuckers. And it's time that we push back. It's time that we ended them. And Scott, I'm more for a summary execution for these type of people than I am for a full drawn out trial.
Yeah. Well, you know,
it's Roy Bean style.
It really seems like, you know, a drastic reorganization of the military is inevitable, right?
Because what's happening right now before our eyes, we're watching them kill what was an efficient, good military and turn it into a bunch of pansies and queers.
Yes.
You know, I mean, they're not meeting their.
So you're not. I mean, you're not going to be able to fight Iran, Russia, and China with an army full of pansies and queers and drag queens and COVID-19 vaccinated zombies. You don't have a military anymore. We saw this coming when they first went down this road. It's one of the big bitter pain in the ass problems I have with Trump. He allowed this shit to go forward, or he's part of it. But, you know, you can only say, well, I was lied to so much, you know, so many at the time. He was the one that allowed this to go forward. The warp speed.
Even if he was lied to, he's got to come to a point, he's got to own it and say it was a mistake.
He does. He does own it. He's responsible.
And so, you know, let me go on a little tangent here. That is, I like Trump. I like his policy positions. I like that he wants to not just close the border, but deport everyone who snuck in here. I like these things. I like Make America First. But my only fear with Trump is that he may be some sort of a Trojan horse.
Yeah.
And that is my fear. And so I'm gonna be just as critical and just as hard on him as I am on Biden or Obama.
Here's the problem with Trump. His Jewish son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who had money in China, his Jewish son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who's got, you know, ties and friendship to Netanyahu, his daughter, Ivanka Trump, who allegedly converted to Jewish Judaism for this Kushner, his son-in-law.
Kushner's dad is the biggest gangster in New Jersey.
So there you go. And they've been all over. He's got no experience in foreign policy, never been in the military, never been in the intelligence sectors, yet his son-in-law Kushner is out pushing all of these deals, including changing the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. And I'll have to add, when I was in Iran in 2018, we got back, and it was Segal Mandelker, a Jewish Israeli, dual Israeli citizen, who was in charge of the secretary or the Treasury Department's foreign assets control. She put sanctions on the New Horizon Conference, Nader Talabzadeh and his wife and the people that were putting on that conference where Americans and Australians and British and even Israelis were there. There's a few Jewish Israelis. Dovid Weiss, who was a Jewish rabbi, who is not a Zionist, who is always arguing against, you know, the Israeli Zionist conquest of Palestine. But this whole conference, the Department of Treasury put sanctions on it and sent FBI agents to everyone's home except mine. They didn't come to see me, but they went to other people, Phil Giraldi, Mike Maloof, everyone that was in the United States. They went to them and said, you can't go back to Iran or else you could be arrested for simply going and speaking, for having a conversation, for generating diplomatic dialogue without being a formal diplomatic.
They're going to try to impose the Hatch Act as their hammer to keep people from talking. anyway, we've identified a domestic enemy. It's right here, right in front of you, these four people here. And they're not loyal to this country. They're loyal to Israel and their own agenda. It's time to end these people. It's enough patience with them. No, it's time for us to get real, get serious, because they're going to kill us if we don't kill them first.
Well, I think you're onto something. It's coming true. Mike, we're almost out of time. I want to hand it to you to get your final closing thoughts on what you see coming. I know we're looking at Ukraine and the wrap-up of this, but these people, do you think that they're suicidal enough to set off a false flag in the United States and blame it on Russia to try and trigger this draft World War II mentality? Because they are delusional, and they have no hesitation inflicting false flag attacks on America to try and mobilize the American population and military. Only I see tragic disabilities in the American population and the American military now, which would have no chance standing up to another world global conflict.
Well, they'll do anything they can do without the United States acting as the armed forces to inflict their agenda. We've got to realize that we are not a republic, that we become an oligarchy, that we work for clowns like this. And I'm ready for that second revolution. I really am. I'd like to do it peacefully. I've lived my whole life obeying the law, trying to be a Boy Scout and do the right thing for the right reasons. But when you have criminals, monsters like this, who don't care, they wouldn't care if the United States lost 500,000 soldiers. They wouldn't care. Whatever it takes to get their agenda. They wouldn't care if we lost 2 million soldiers, the entire armed forces. They wouldn't care because their ideology and what they want to accomplish is more important than American lives. That's not what this country is built on. They're foreigners. They're parasites, and we need to expel them by whatever means possible, hopefully into a very shallow grave someplace. So anyway, that's my closing statement there.
Well, I think the day is certainly coming, and these people are domestic enemies. They are actively designing attacks, excuses, propaganda, strategic communications. They're designing, I think, domestic internal events. I'll say it again. I predict, as we saw before, the setup of a fake assassination of Joe Biden with this old man, 70 years old or whatever, in Utah, that's over 200-300 pounds, walks with a cane. I think that is a setup for their eventual assassination of Kamala Harris to move in Gavin Newsom, and then an assassination of Joe Biden, perhaps standing next to Zelensky to blame it on Russia. I think Joe Biden is going to be assassinated because these people, the Kagans, no doubt will be behind it, as they've been behind a lot of this. That's how they try and trigger the country into a 9/11 awakening. As we saw in 9/11, nobody questioned the scientific physical impossibility of the 9/11 attacks. It was just suddenly blown up, and then an emotional deluge, an emotional flood came into the country and swept everybody up in this emotionalism, this patriotic inebriation, lighting candles and playing music.
Again, Scott, we will not get fooled again. One closing statement. I listened to Eric Bolling on Newsmax tonight, and he said that under the Biden Secret Service, Trump needs to be afraid for his life because, they're if they don't succeed with the litigations, they're going to assassinate him because he knows he's going to win.
Well, if they assassinate Donald Trump, do you see just it's a flat out declaration of war, civil war. The country's gone at that point. I think.
Yep. Anyway, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it, LT.
Thank you very much. A lot to cover. Thank you very much for joining us, Mike Harrison. Thank you for joining us on GlobalFreedomTV.com. Join us again on Global Freedom's Great Awakenings tomorrow. We'll have Dr. James Fetzer. Thank you. God bless you. Good night.